Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Matrix Moments. I have with me Anurag Sinha here, who's the founder of OneCard. It's special for me on multiple levels. First of all, I think this is the first one I am hosting one-on-one with any founder, so that's one. Second, special for Anurag and the company because the company became a unicorn. You guys would have read about it. We'll ask Anurag whether to confirm it or not. But third and most importantly, you know, having been doing this for 16 years, it's very seldom that at the beginning of a journey, you know, typically in company building, it's 0 to 1, 1 to 10, 10 to infinity. It's very seldom that it is obvious or it is clear at the beginning that a company is being built for scale. So that's the topic that we are going to talk about, which is building for scale, but building for scale right at the beginning. And that's the tough part. So with that, Anurag, welcome. Great to have you here. Very excited. Thank you for coming by. No,
thank you, Avi. Pleasure to be here. I've listened to so many of your podcasts with founders as well as your own ones to explain the company building journeys. We have learned a lot, so happy to be here.
Well, okay, thank you. I have learned a lot more from you, which we'll cover here. Anurag, so let's just get started with, for the audience, just talk about your background, how you built the, you know, the various phases of the banker journey, with IIT, and what led to OneCard and why OneCard?
Okay, so let me just start from the beginning. Come from a middle class family, went to engineering, did my engineering in 99, worked for a couple of years, and then did my master's from IIM Bangalore. Did not quite understand then what tech can do. That's why I decided to do an MBA. And happened to join ICICI Bank from campus. Now, we were lucky, this was around 2003. And India was for the first time witnessing the growth of retail financial services or consumer finance as we call it. This wasn't the case. Before that, largely banking was take money from retail customers and give loans to big companies. And ICICI happens to be on the forefront of it. So we got a front side view to learn. We grew big time. And then 2008 happened, which was a lot of us learned real banking during that period. And, you know, everybody was hit. But ICICI went through a tough period, especially in the unsecured lending, because it was the largest lender. So we learned lots of new lessons, and post 2010, as it was over, that was another big learning that you got to stay on course. One of the big learning for financial services that you have to plan for a long period, build a large business, because these cycles will come. It's a cyclical business, it's an infrastructure layer. It's a, like a base layer of economy. So post 2010, it was a very different era of building businesses in India, more data oriented, customer centric and things like that. And happened to run payments also as part of my vertical, so got a good chance to see the emergence of fintechs. If you recall, this was the first area in fintech which got disrupted, the payments. So I could learn very fast that probably the future of consumer interfaces in financial services, fintech will play a large role. And because this is an extremely tech-oriented area, iterative process, so I jumped the ship, built my first startup in helping people track money, build our credit product, and then OneCard happened. So that's been a journey. So fortunate to work with some very great teams, both in the bank and startup journey. And
I'm just curious, Anurag, that's a fantastic background. But given 2016 UPI kind of, started taking off, you decided to do credit cards in 2018. It seems like that credit cards versus the direction in the market was more UPI. And I still remember our discussions at that time. What was the why now? What was the conviction that credit cards still make sense?
So I think, credit card is a dual product built into one. On one side, it's a payment product. And other side, it's a credit product. If you look at the business model of this product, it's hardcore credit oriented. So we were more bullish on consumer credit as an opportunity, as a team. Now, idea was, what do you want to solve for? There are various product vehicles to solve for. My earlier product, which I, you know, did in this market, was a consumer loan product, which is like a line of credit which you can take in your bank accounts. Beautiful product, people loved it. Problem is, loans are need-based products, and usually these needs are very time-sensitive ones. So unless they remember about you, it was very difficult for you to reacquire the customers. So, you know, for loans are, you know, need-based products, and usually they are time-sensitive ones. So, how do you build a long-term relationship with the customer on that? Even if you look at the lending products of banks, you know, the customers they source from outsourced channels, they don't make money on the first time. They actually make money on the cross-sell and the, you know, the customer who is coming back again and again because they have a long-standing relationship with the bank. So we thought, as a tech company, we have to build a model which is more engagement-oriented rather than disbursement-oriented. And that's how we came about to, you know, do credit cards. Now, I just want to step back that the way we define ourselves, very important context to remember, you know, credit card is a very large consumer credit product across the world. And in India, it's also becoming large now. The overall balance sheet of credit card business in India is more than 1.5 lakh crore now. It's growing at almost 30% CAGR for the last 5 years. But if you have to take a 5-10 year view from here on, you know, someone like us has to define our role much more generically. So we call ourselves a transactional credit company. We don't care whether you use credit cards or some other product, which we don't even know today. And the reason I'm saying so, because things are moving really fast.
There's UPI on.
We have a young generation which has completely onboarded themselves on mobile. They have not followed the traditional path of banking evolution where you open account, get debit cards, ATMs, then POS, then internet banking. They're just directly onboarding themselves. And forget about banking, they're consuming everything online, everything on mobile. So we don't know what product will actually suit there. And we have demonstrated in UPI. Now, specifically because you asked this question and we have been debating this for last, I would say, 3.5-4 years. In the company also, we debate a lot. I think what UPI did, UPI built a massive infrastructure layer. It made Indians comfortable using money on mobile. And that is a big, big adoption problem to solve. A single product or company cannot solve this. This was a collective effort done by all of the industry players, led by, of course, NPCI and RBI and government, all banks, apps like PhonePe, Google Pay, everybody contributed to it to drive it. And this creates, on which of products like ours gets built. I'm like, 50% of our repayment happens from UPI. So we are super excited now that UPI is being opened for
credit cards. Yeah.
So as a tech company, we will innovate on all of that.
And I think you're defining your problem statement as solving consumer credit, consumer needs backwards rather than the form factor, right? I remember you telling me that it's not about the plastic, it's about the credit.
And I'll tell you what, the way we define, 65% of India is below 30.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is one of the most aspirational Indian generation, at least we have read about it. Forget about seeing it. Okay. Their aspirations are here.
Yeah.
Affordability is here because naturally incomes are catching up and all that. So there is a big gap.
Yeah.
And consumption is the biggest, I would say, pillar of Indian economy. We want to play in part in that. Simple. We want to make it simple, you know, for customers to use.
Connecting back to your banking background, I remember a few years ago when I started, Vikram pulled me into fintech. And I used to read about how all the US banks used to say, you know, there's financial services and there's tech in fintech, right? And basically, all the incumbents said, financial services is going to win fintech also, the tech also. There are some famous names I won't take who really went panned fintech and then adopted it later. In India, I've seen it to be very different. Even the banks seem very collaborative. They all have digital officers. You came from the banking side. Now, we'll come to regulations later, but just in terms of the synergy between banks and fintechs, why is it playing out differently? Is it playing out differently?
It is playing out differently, very differently than the rest of the world. I'll tell you, so there is the first part of the context is the market itself. Now, a lot of developed markets, you know, in many product categories, it's a zero-sum game. The only way you can grow is take share from someone else. On the contrary, if you look at India, you'll pick up any product category, banking, credit, life insurance, mutual funds, markets, general insurance, penetration level is still very, very low. In fact, I would say PMJDY solved savings, UPI solved payment security. Still, even after UPI growth, 80% transactions still happening in cash. So we have a huge play there. So one of the reason why it's a, such a symbiotic relationship is because there is a large market
that's
out there.
Point.
We are not actually competing with each other. It is a zero. So that's why the propensity to partner is much deeper. That's one. Second thing is, you know, like Indian banks, the core banking stack is fairly new because it's all built by Indian partners. So Finacle, Banks 2000 from TCS, or IFXQ from Oracle, all of these have been built in India. So Indian banks have reasonably good tech stack as far as the banking is concerned. And I think we all know tech talent is abundant in India. So these are very potent combinations.
That's a very important point.
And the third point is, I think, which I think a lot of people have already been writing, the biggest innovator in fintech is actually Government of India and RBI. Yeah. They have been innovating at a very different scale. The way Aadhaar came about, PAN databases, video KYC, all of these are infrastructural play which a single entity can't do.
Yeah.
They are actually improving the UX for everyone.
That's a great point.
So I think all
penetration, digitally enabled banks and government enabled.
Absolutely. Now, so you know, like so this becomes a fairly potent combination. Yeah. But I'll give you one more angle to it. So this is now what we call it the third stage of fintech revolution in India. The first stage started somewhere in 2010-12
with Razorpay, payments,
PTMs of the world, where banks were largely bankers to the tech, you know, one, and then came 2016 play where the UPI revolution happened, where bank walked a little more extra, and, you know, like regulations came, allowed third party apps to do payment transactions and all that. Till then, banks were looking at more of this partnerships as a nice to have. Now the current state avatar, banks are actually building business models around it.
Yeah.
And this is, we are seeing all across large banks, mid-sized banks, small banks. And so this is very different, if you ask me. This is becoming much more, I would say, a rational economic play, business model driven. And I would say the all of this underline is that consumer is becoming more and more digitized.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
they have no choice but to do it.
No, so that brings me to the core theme here, which I'm hoping that the listeners can learn from. So I still remember coming to Pune maybe early 2019 when you guys were in one room with the whiteboard. And I maybe spent 3-4 hours and you just went on the whiteboard and went driver by driver of the business and what the thoughts were. And I remember taking a picture of that and sending it to the team saying unicorn in the making. So congratulations. It's clearly worked out. It seems to me, but it's not as easy as it may seem from the outside when people say a unicorn in 2 years, 3 years, right? So I wasn't going to ask this, but now that we mentioned, what things have actually played out better than expected and what things have been harder than expected?
So, you know, like, I'll give you answer a little differently. Some things which didn't look so good actually turned out to help us a lot. For example, I tell you the biggest unknown for our business model was COVID.
Yeah.
We were about to launch, you know, we ran a wait list. We had 300,000 people signed up. We were supposed to issue credit cards. And then COVID happened.
Yeah.
And we just went on to, I mean, we didn't know how long this will last and all that. And as soon as the COVID lockdown got over in June 20, I was raring to go because we wanted to capture this data into our business model. And thankfully, our bank partner supported it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, but the way COVID shifts consumer behavior is very different.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we have seen some of these traits in 2016 during demon as well. But this was very different. I think we got a benefit of the work being done during that period, and merchants really made digital payments, a, you know, like a, you know, like a mass product.
Yeah.
So I think this played out very well for us, and I think the second thing is that you know, some of the work which RBI did during COVID times, allowing video KYC, digital, lot of digital assets to be used, this is very important for us. Came out better than that. I think if you ask me what we should have done differently, probably we could have scaled even faster. I think we did not understand that COVID will go so fast.
Yeah.
We thought probably it will be much longer. We became more conservative. We went a little slow in our development cycles. But I think in long journey, these are steps.
No, but you know, in your preamble, you discuss the 2008 cycle, and one of the lessons, again coming back to this theme of building for scale, you said that taught you that, and we won't get into exactly what happened then, but to plan for long periods. I remember, just for the audience's benefit, our chats during COVID, June, July, and I remember telling you, Anurag, why would we launch a credit product at a time of income destruction? And you telling me about the 2008 cycle and how these things turn, and it's kudos. I think it's amazing. It worked out better than expected, but to your credit, at that time where it was very unclear what the right answer was, you were still going back to the lessons of 2008 and saying, we should not make these mistakes and we should do continue in a calibrated fashion. Let's back up. So how did you, going back to the theme of building for scale, every time I spoke to you, you said, I'm not doing this for investors, I'm not doing this to sell, I'm going to create a legacy, a large company that goes public. That has gone into a number of your choices, and I want to hit most of those. Start with the founding team and the fact that it seems like all of you moved to Pune and almost live together. So how did that all come about?
So I think it was very obvious for us to think of an idea in financial services because it came from the background. But I think when we started digging deeper into this problem, consumption credit, and now that we have much better clarity than even 2018, that how large this looks like, we were very clear that this is looking a fairly large opportunity. And I have a strong belief that if you want to build a long-term business, you have to stay long on a problem. So my first task was that, okay, can I find a set of people who believe as passionately about this problem as I feel about it. And especially because we are building that, we want to build our own tech stacks. A lot of design choices we decided early on. So we had to believe in this opportunity fairly long term. So naturally, the first step is to go, you know, look for people you already know very well. And I think you will see this trait not only in founding team, but also beyond founding team. We rely a lot on references. Because I don't know, it's some of our thinking. I've heard a lot of your talks also around that.
Can please convince everybody who's listening and people at Matrix that references matter.
I don't think you can do justice in an hour and a 2 hours time. You know our style, even when we raise money, we don't like to meet an investor and say, put a gun on that, could you like to invest in us? We want rather them to know us well. We want to know them well because, you know, these relationships have to last long. And, you know, like, so I think the same thing goes here. We built, we were getting into regulated area. We were getting into extremely domain specific area. We wanted to find people who stay long on this problem as much. And I'll give you an anecdote. One of my co-founder, Rupesh, he actually was part of the team which built UPI. Now imagine how much discussion we both of us would have gone through to figure out where should we start. Yeah. You know, like somebody who was part of the journey, he was part of the team which built Google Pay, launched it. But you know, these discussions help us clarify our own doubts. Yeah. What kind of company we want to build in. So I would say.
And just coming back to your point, I was going to ask it separately, but just connecting it here. I have seen this followership. Even now we've hired somebody in legal who you have known for decades. Generally, it's not 1-2 years, it's decades. So that is fantastic. How does that result in, if I were to ask you, what is the culture at OneCard? What is the, and how does that all come
to? So I think, in fact, many a time when I take interviews, and to be fair, I have a luxury of not checking people on technicals, because when I get interview, a lot of those things have been done. You know, I'll give you a secret. Many of the time, half of the time, I speak rather than the candidate speak. And the important thing is I want to make sure they understand what problem we are solving.
Yeah.
And for me, that is really important, because I think, you know, like good people always have options to go.
Yeah.
But they need to buy in the problem as much as we are buying. So I spend a lot of time explaining them the problem we are solving. As long as you are able to get past that, then it is about, you know, like, what do you want to contribute on, and how much comfortable do you have with the, you know, the leadership team or the founding team, because that kind of define your energy in the team. So some lot of people who worked with us in different parts of our life, they come back because they've seen our genuineness the way we saw it. And I would say a lot of credit to my alma mater in ICICI. We were given a lot of freedom. We built great products, did a lot of our size, you know, set of mistakes. But this camaraderie stayed with us.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, we are able
And that's very obvious when I sit in your office. I think it's clearly highly performance driven, yet you feel that people are, the camaraderie is the right word. That is a lot of camaraderie.
You know, and you asked about culture. There are three things I repeatedly tell people, and this is not a statement which I'm making now when we are a little bigger. Even when we are smaller, we used to talk about these three things. One, alignment. Yeah. You know, like alignment to a shared goal is non-negotiable. It was not, but it's probably rather not to get the person in. Because if there's no alignment, we just, you know, yeah. like, you know, it just team get distracted. That's one.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two is about we tend to be extremely humble.
Yeah.
You know, because we say that we win in the markets. We don't win against each other. And it's even more important for us as we become big that we remain, you know, remain committed to this virtue of being, you know, humble. Whether partners, you know, like we like to be, you know, retain this in our culture. The third part is strive for excellence. So yeah. keep building it. In fact, keep shipping in the sense that we don't care in short term what happens. We want to make sure that we build things. I'm like, we have debated a lot in our board meetings also many a times that why can't you use something off the shelf?
Yeah.
But we always say, no, this is not going to help us in short term.
Which brings me actually to that question again, going to building for scale. One of the big choices you took up front, which also would have taken a lot more time, was to build your own tech stack. And you know, in general, in the startup world, there is this view of run fast, break things, mm-hmm. do things faster. Whereas you said, no, I have to build it bottoms up. It's going to take time. It may take 12 months, 18 months. We'll launch after that. There are off-the-shelf solutions you could have integrated with. So how should entrepreneurs think about, you know, which pieces is it okay to potentially outsource and go faster? Because I know you guys have also gone faster, and I'll come to some of that. And which pieces you have to build yourself?
I think so. You know our view on that, but let me just give you some color to it. Why do we feel so?
Yeah.
It also got to take the context and the category we are solving for. For example, if one is solving for category which doesn't exist, probably they themselves don't know what they're building in. But for a category like ours, which is a fairly well-established need, and we did a lot of hard work in establishing that. Second thing, you also have to remember that this business model needs to be long-term. You know, you cannot, you know, the cost of errors are very high. You also have to remember it's a regulated area. Okay, so there are regulations involved. And you know, the cost of doing errors and all is just like fairly high. It's a trust-based business. The cost of errors in trust-based business is really high.
Yeah.
So we, you know, like, and this is part of our culture. So like, I have a 70-30 rule. We always tell people, spend 70% time in thinking and designing.
Yeah.
And do 30% in executing. And this rule pertains to not only for engineering, for product dev, for data science, models, everything. We follow this to the last T, even in customer service.
Yeah.
We say, boss, 70% of the time, just think of designing, 30% just execute. And you know, this is, again, weaving in from a long term. So from very early on, I mean, you know, I'm like in an early stage, we had options, you know, when people say, why can't you launch with somebody else stack? We say, what are we solving for?
Yeah.
These products already exist, so we don't see any value we are bringing to the market. So, and somewhere this become part of our, you know, I would say thinking and strategy. So, just to rephrase my answer, we got a benefit of this category being so large, underpenetrated, being regulated, you have to think long term, and which kind of forced us to think. Now, it's not that we don't do experimentation. We do experimentation, but at a feature level, not at a strategy.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't know, you might not recall, but you mentioned to me once that having a very articulated strategy in a startup is like, you know, going with Google Maps. You know, you will reach there, but you will reach more efficiently if you have a much well-defined strategy. So I like, you know, forget about us. We want to make sure that our team also knows what we are building 1 year hence, 2 year hence.
No, I think this 70% of the time thinking and designing and 30 actually doing summarizes a lot of what I have seen in the build for scale. And which, you know, as an investor sometimes may have felt, okay, this is taking longer than what one has seen. And then when it comes out of the gate, it is so well thought through that it, you know, gets off the ground faster. Which brings me to your GTM. Until I remember when we were first chatting, I hadn't thought as much about what the go-to-market strategy would be for you. And I remember in our second or third meeting, you said, you know, the thing that I'm thinking most about is that. So why did it matter and what did we finally do and how's that played out?
So I'm like, I think we have debated this also, you know, some, a lot of has been written. India is not a uniform market. There are many India underneath. There's a global Indian, then there is the affluent Indian, mass affluent, mass, and then you have bottom of the pyramid. So Indian market is not uniform. So I think, you know, if you talk in our language, product market fit, you will arrive at certain segment for sure. You build any product, you will find a product market fit. But are you finding product market with the right segment?
Yeah.
And where are you reaching it, the, you know, in the right way or not? So I have somehow, I've always believed for a market like India, GTM is more, is a precursor to PMF.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, otherwise you get a false sense of PMF. You know, you believe that you found a segment, you know, like a product market fit, but actually you didn't do the right way. So is it scalable? So that's why, you know, I think a lot of this also because we have worked in this category. So
yeah.
We understand there is a very, very large need to serve. What we were obsessed about, am I able to reach the right customer in the right way?
Yeah.
And that's why go-to-market was super important. Especially you're working in a regulated area in partnership with banks. So there are certain norms you have to follow. The way we solve this, you know, credit card is a cyclical business. It's a highly risky, high yield business. We are also keeping an eye on that if we have to build a large business here, it's also our responsibility to build a community of credible users. So you've got to educate them, enable them to access credit. And other thing we saw during our go-to-market strategy was, out of 110 million users, Indians we estimate eligible for a product, credit card, we saw almost 100 million already there in the bureau. So we just combined these two thoughts very easily and say, you know, probably a credit score could be a good way to reach out to these customers. It'll help us to address their need, also educate them, and actually give them credit cards. So now it sounds very easy.
And that's one score, and now it's 20 million downloads later, right?
Yes, it sounds very easy, but, you know, forget about, you know, investors, even internal teams were very dead against it.
Yeah.
Because in early stage, you have limited engineering resources, and you are seeing that your credit card tech stack will take 9 months to build. Now you're saying that first 3 months, let's build one score.
Yeah.
You know, are you crazy? Now, of course, everybody believes.
Yeah.
So it was a good
call. That's gone much better than expected. Right?
Yeah. I remember, you know, like fighting internally within the team that why are we, you know, we want to be a credit company. Why are we spending time on that? But we believe that if you have to think not today, you have to think 5 years, 10 years hence, you need to build that.
Super. So, you spoke about bank partnerships and relationships and then, you know, regulator also in the same breath. So the reality is in the last 6 weeks and maybe last 6 months, even more, every 2-3 weeks, there's a heart attack, right? From the regulator or what may appear on the outside. What is your view of how best to stitch together this ecosystem of the bank partnership, the regulator and the fintech?
So I think being a regulated area, regulations are to follow. I'm like, there are no two ways.
It's a feature, not a bug.
Exactly. It's a feature you got to learn. In fact, I've done many podcasts with engineers and they talk about how do you teach this to, you know, like engineers and product. I said, everybody who's working in fintech is supposed to understand regulation. It's a hygiene factor. But let me tell you, how to look at regulations, especially if you're a fintech founder or even investor. See, regulations are policy making. You know, they are directionally long term.
Yeah.
By design. They don't look at individual business model in short term because they are looking for long term policy objectives. So whenever somebody has to evaluate regulations, I would say 6 to 8 weeks is too short a period. They have to look at least 12 months, 6 months, if not longer, to figure out where is the direction it is going. And let me give you some anecdotal examples here in our area, in fintech. In November 21, the Digital Lending Working Group paper happened where RBI kind of, you know, acknowledged most of the innovations happening in digital lending. It was a big plus for the entire sector. Then came, the creation of fintech department itself. That means RBI is actually setting up a different department to look after. I'm like, you know, the different department, their mandate is to actually grow and manage this fintech as an ecosystem. So, in my opinion, it's a big plus. Then came Master Circular for credit debit cards. Then came the digital lending guideline just came out. Couple of weeks back.
Then from the ministry you got digital banking.
Absolutely, Niti Aayog published two sets of paper.
Yeah.
Then you also have outsourcing draft circular came in. So you know, if you look at in direction, so the regulator is trying to define the guardrails under which in which they want to grow this ecosystem. Now, in short term, there might be some hiccups in certain business model because people have to align to that. But if you ask me as an investor as well as a founder, what both of us want is that clarity in long term. So that we can align ourselves to that. Yeah. Because what we are interested is that the rules of the game have to be known to everyone. Yeah. The good thing for us in the past has been in financial services, the rules have been followed for everyone, which is a big thing, by the way. So I think if you personally ask me, you know, it's actually
helped you guys differentiate even more, right? Because you have always done things by the book, within the guidelines, and then always there are, you know, some things that may happen outside. And I remember discussions that should we be thinking about that, and it was always been first principles, and that ultimately plays out.
In fact, many of the people message me or ask me that how do you navigate regulation. I said you don't navigate, you follow.
Very good.
That's a very simple statement.
Very simple statement
to make, but I think this is how we do. There is absolutely no two ways about it.
So Anurag, two questions on fundraising. One, I remember when you started out raising money, you almost had a few names in mind. We were lucky enough to be one of those. And I remember when I didn't follow up, you were here the following Tuesday, you said, let's meet. And you pretty much stated that you are somebody I would want to partner with and tell me how I can help you get there, something like that, which I really appreciated. You have continued to do that even with later stage investors. So both for an early founder, and then you lately gave me some very interesting idea about if you don't need money, don't have rounds, don't structure big rounds, just, you know, bring people with conviction. So what's the theme and specific advice for people at early stage as well as later stage?
Okay, so I think one is that we spend a lot of time defining our idea and execution plan. So I think, in my opinion, that is the first thing to do, because that will define what kind of investors you want on a cap table. And the reason why we chose those four names, actually five, we just met four, is because we wanted to work with investors who understand this long-term game, especially when, if you recall, our product was supposed to get launched after 15 to 18 months.
Yeah.
So we wanted people who have huge conviction on us. And literally we were meeting on paper. We had no prototype, nothing. So, but we had a big plan. And we wanted to find, so we look for those investors who have invested early and stayed long in problems. So we met, we were lucky to get, I remember, just to replay the statement which I made, is that I have a very simple thesis. I think, you know, investors will figure out their own way to evaluate. That's their business. They meet day in, day out founders. As a founder, what I request all my investors is that decision is yours, plus please give me feedback. So that at least I carry back something out of the meeting. Whether you are like something and you don't like it. In fact, I don't know if you recall or not, even when you said yes, I asked you, why are you saying yes to us? I want to understand that. And this is part of our learning process. What I have seen that when you approach investors like that, they kind of have a very different level of respect or kind of maturity towards you. So I tell all the early stage founders that please, don't question the decision, but do take the feedback. Because we are trying to do a matchmaking. It's not that your model is bad or investor didn't understand. It just didn't find the fit. It's as simple as that. So that is our early stage thinking. We were looking for people who can stay long, and that has continued. We don't like to run like a weak structure that, okay, fine, we have a week running, please come and invest. A lot of investors, we have spent months together even before they even came to our cap table. You know, even the current investors knew, they had been to our office 3 times over the last 12 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, this comfort gets built over a period of time. And the reason is we are a little more, you know, cagey about, because we are very long term. We want to make sure that everybody who comes on our cap table.
No, and I've seen that. I've seen that in the past where you've said no to certain investors because you thought they would push you for unsustainable growth or... what is that latest thought? So clearly conviction, quote unquote, runs as one of the things, conviction on both sides.
And the second thing I will say, like, if you look at our journey, when we were started, we were largely a tech product company. Even though we call fintech, the first 18 months we did nothing but just do tech. So our investor profile reflected exactly like that. The first three investors were all tech heavy investors. You know, after that, as we started getting into our business model, become more and more finance oriented, we attracted a lot of investors which come from financial profile. And the idea is that so that we get complementary skills on our cap table, you know, who are able to bring the depth of financial services investments over decades. They've funded banks, they've funded large non-banks across the markets, so that we get a good mix of inputs, you know, as a shareholder level. And, you know, like, I remember when, you know, like, we were raising and, you know, we kept requesting early stage investors to create space for others. So that's one part of the strategy, that your
stage specific,
your strategy, your stage and as well as your business model should reflect into your shareholders so that they are able to give inputs to you. And there is a better consensus between the shareholders. That's number one. Number two, another big strategy we have always followed, I think, which I learned from you, which is dilution specific, not valuation. What we say that valuation is driven by markets. Dilution is driven by the founders. Especially if you want to work a long-term company, you have to chase dilution. Because valuation is not in our
and
control.
And now you have taken that learning to the next level and you were telling me that round toh karna hi nahi chahiye. What was that?
You know why?
One?
Because now let me ask you.
And this is, of course, companies who have the luxury of not needing to raise money and they have investors
and
chasing.
Absolutely. No, let me give you why I say so. If you believe you are a long-term going concern, isn't the fundraising just a part of the process?
It's like a public stock. It's a trading stock.
As long as if you are thinking yourself like a going concern in long term, fundraise will keep happening.
Yeah.
The different part of, as long as there is a you keep meeting investors. So we don't like to run like a fundraising process. Many of the time, Series D, Series B, all of them got preempted. You are part of it because the it's not that they just came on and say, I want to put up. They knew us. They knew us for a good amount of time. We've also allowed a lot of investors to come in with small checks before so that they learn about us, we learn about them and then double up their holdings in us.
That's
so
actually a very actionable takeaway for later stage. One, you've generally let sometimes let people in with small checks into existing rounds such that they get to know the company over a period of time and they have always doubled up in the next round.
Absolutely. I know, remember we used to get some of the feedback that what if these guys don't follow up? I said that's the capability I am taking about myself, that if we are going to execute the way, in a way we are a fairly boring company. We have done exactly what we told you 3 years back. But I think, you know, like at some point in time investors then start expecting you that okay, fine, if you have done for last 3 years, probably you will do also.
I need more boring companies. So where do we go from here? What do you guys want to do in the next 5, 10, 15 years? What should people expect?
So I think we are super bullish on India consumption credit story. That will not going to change. It is going to be the mainstay of our business model. But how will it look like 10 years hence? We don't know because it will depend on.
But you're not going to sell the company?
No, we don't want to sell the company. We want to outlaw us. We probably, you know, want to let someone else run it ahead of us. That's what we want to build.
So that's also building to last and building for scale.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of this will depend how the regulatory, landscape changes because we are in regulated area. Having said that, we want to do all adjacent businesses around this, you know, consumption credit, but keep the focus there.
Any summary things you would like to tell people who are starting out from your own entrepreneurship journey, both what you think, how you thought about it that went right, or anything you would do differently?
I think one thing, you know, like I learned it, I don't know whether I picked up from you or somebody else, but, you know, I used to always have this doubt that why the company get a higher valuation in developed market versus Indian markets. And a lot of time it is linked to GDP, size of the market and all that. But I got a very different insight was that, you know, a lot of the markets, the idea makes more, you know, like bucks because you can always change the team to do it. But in India, you don't get to change the team.
Markets you versus pivot. Team, yeah.
So I think this is a very different insight. So I always tell people, please overemphasize on team.
Very good.
You know, and that is my single advice to early stage founders. Please focus on team, because many times you build teams with people because who bring complementary skills. That's important.
Yeah.
But not at the cost of not alignment of vision. So team first is super. Market, of course, is second. These are the two most important things people have to search for. But within the two also, I would say overemphasize on team.
Superb. Thank you, Anurag. Congratulations again. And thank you for taking the time for this. Wonderful learnings for everybody.
Thank you, Avi.
Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in. For more Matrix Moments episodes, you can head to www.matrixpartners.in/matrixmoments. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more updates.